Yeah, it's time to parlay, time to win a little money. Deegan and Juice with Kylan and Stucky. I know you got a chalk, but it's time for the teaser. This is how we do it when it's football season. Hey, Kylan and Stucky, yeah. Hey, Kylan and Stucky, woo.
What's up, Degenerate Nation? Welcome to Degen and Juice, episode 32. I'm Stucky. With me, as always, is Colin Wilson, coming to us live from a depressed state in Arkansas after that game the other night. I wish I would have came down. After the start, I was like, oh, I'm glad I didn't go down there for Kentucky. But how's it going down there?
Nobody knows what to think about our team. I mean, we get on this, you know, streak of winning games, and I know we were playing everybody mostly at home and had a couple cupcakes on the road, and we were hanging with Kentucky pretty well. And then it must have been maybe a 30-5 run there in the second half. The team looked tired. The team didn't look like they had any energy. Macon couldn't hit anything. Barford couldn't get open. You know, we had a hard time containing them one-on-one. Usually it's the three-point shots that kill Arkansas. You know, their perimeter D is terrible shit. But just one-on-one, straight up on the dribble, we got beat badly.
Yeah, that Arkansas is a team that's very difficult to figure out, as is Kentucky. I mean, now that I've recently moved to Lexington, and my girl is a huge Kentucky fan. All of my friends down here, I've adopted them, and they're very difficult to figure out. They'll win at West Virginia, win at Arkansas, but very inconsistent. And I was surprised by that result. I thought they were going to get ran out of the gym after the start. Speaking of adopted teams, to transition into, we actually have a guest to start here, and we'll talk some college basketball. We're actually joined by Matthew Holt, COO at CG Analytics and the Vice President of Business Development for CG Technology. The reason for having Matthew on is CG is going to release their college basketball conference tournament futures tomorrow morning, and we're recording this Thursday, so that'll be Friday morning. What's going on, Matthew?
Hey, gentlemen. How are we doing tonight?
Everything's going well. I'm getting excited for March, and I take it that you'll be the first to market with the conference futures. Is that correct?
Yeah, I haven't seen any yet, so I assume we're going to be first to market. We were first to market last year with these. We tend to be first a lot with most of the college stuff.
So is this timing normal? Like, was the reason that you want to get these out tomorrow because you want to be first to market, or was your goal just, hey, let's get these out as soon as possible? What's the thinking with the timing?
Well, we just try to get as much content out to our players as we can. So as soon as Super Bowl ended, we did MLB season win totals, and we were the first one in any of the markets to have MLB season win totals out. And then the next logical step after MLB season win totals is basically college basketball conference tournament odds. And you want to get it as close to the tournament as you can, but still have as much, you know, leeway up to it in wagering time as you can. So at this point, most of the major conferences have three or four games left. Most of the smaller ones probably have about two. So it gives you another game or two leeway where stuff could still happen, shift around a little bit. But it also gives us, you know, at least 10 days lead up even to the small conference tournaments.
All right. Now, I mentioned that I've adopted Kentucky. And people are like, oh, you jumped on the bat. That's an easy team to adopt. But you've adopted UNLV. I'll start with a trivia question, and I'm curious to get your thoughts on the Mountain West. When was the last time UNLV won the Mountain West Conference Tournament?
Oh, boy, it's been a few years. It's at least been, I think, since Lon Kruger was here. I'm not even 100% sure. I assume we won at least one with Lon. I think we won one the year that we went to the Sweet 16 with Lon.
I believe it's, I have it right here. It was 2008 or 2007, whatever one of those, that season, that 2007, 2008 season, which is amazing because UNLV's hosted it since 2006. Then they hosted it since 2000, but there was a couple year break. I think it was in Colorado for a couple years. I was actually out there for the game when Jimmer Fredette went. I was there for the tournament, went for like 50 something points. But I always root for UNLV to win, but they can never just get over the hump. You know, and they've had some good teams since 2008, but yeah, it's been almost 10 years since their last conference tournament win. This team's got to be frustrating to watch, especially after last night. What's your overall take of the Mountain West? And do you give UNLV any shot at winning the conference tournament? Because that's their only way into the dance.
Yeah, I'll tell you about coming into the Mountain West season. I was actually confident that after a three-year hiatus that we were going to get multi-bids from the Mountain West again this year. Boise had such a strong non-conference schedule. UNLV even had a strong non-conference year. They played Arizona tough, actually beat Utah. You know, Nevada obviously had a great non-conference. Wyoming had a couple of big wins. I thought, great, we could probably get two teams in, especially if Nevada doesn't win the tournament. We'll probably get two teams in. Now, I think really the only way we get two teams in is if Nevada doesn't win their tournament. And because I'm not even sure Boise, I know they're kind of on the bubble, but I don't even know that they're an at-large team right now. And UNLV certainly isn't. They certainly have no shot if they don't win their conference tournament. And the body language the last two games has just been, the last three games really. So it started last Wednesday on Valentine's Day with the home game against Air Force, 14.5-point favorite. UNLV was lucky to win. They played terrible. And I think the problem, and then they came back and lose by 40 at San Diego on last night, had completely no life at all. And in fact, their future first-round draft pick, Brandon McCoy, failed to even make it across half court on multiple possessions, literally walking up the court. I don't know if they've quit on the coach, if there's some dissension with what's going on, if they're just fatigued. But something's really going wrong with the effort level. You know, look, teams lose games, and that's fine, but the effort level has just been non-existent the last few games.
Just to clarify on the Mountain West, you know, right now, if you follow any bracketology done by Lenardi, he's definitely got Nevada in, but he's got Boise as the last four out right now. And, you know, of course, they've lost twice to Nevada. So it seems like it's Nevada's tournament to lose. Fresno is on a five-game winning streak, though, so maybe they can make some noise.
Yeah, there's some good players. I mean, the kid Hutchinson for Boise is good. I mean, what's McCoy, you mentioned for UNLV, is a potential lottery pick. The concerning thing for me about UNLV is, you mentioned the Air Force game, they sleptwalked through that game. So you could say, you know, it was after they beat Wyoming and then Nevada, I believe. And then they have San Diego State on deck. So you kind of, all right, I'll forgive that game. They escape with a win. But then to lose, to give up 90, whatever they did, 96 or something to San Diego State, they just got ran out of the gym. And then to come back with no effort after that you're right. It's very concerning for UNLV. Can you say what you're going to have them priced at? And do you think it's worth a wager, or are you staying far away?
Yeah, I'm probably going to stay far away because they're just so frustrating me. And they're 7-1 to win it all. Nevada's 2-1. Boise's 3-1. Fresno's probably the value at 5-1 to win the Mountain West. And I expect that we will take some value on Fresno. New Mexico's 6-1. And I wouldn't be surprised if we take some New Mexico action too, just because they shoot the three so much that if they ever got hot for a 3 or 4 day stretch from behind the arc, New Mexico's certainly capable. And then San Diego State at 8. I think we'll probably also take some San Diego State action just because the Aztecs historically have been such a perennial contender in the Mountain West that people are going to see 8-1 and probably automatically assume value on the Aztecs.
Fair enough. One of the things that I actually saw you tweet about was that there was some struggles with the Big East out of all conferences. Now, when I think of the Big East, I think it's almost like a math equation. Like, Xavier can't beat Villanova, but Villanova can't beat Butler. Now they finally did, but there's certain teams that give some others trouble. And St. John's actually gives Villanova a lot of trouble just because of the way they play. They make you play their style of street ball. So I don't think, you know, as much as I love Ponds, I don't think St. John's can make a run. Now there might be some value depending on the number that gets put out there, but a team that has shown that they can beat Villanova in Butler, who, you know, maybe there's some value in the Butler number. So what did you struggle with the most there on looking at the Big East, and where do you see some value?
So we ended up having Villanova plus 150, Xavier 3-1, Creighton 5, Butler 6, Seton Hall 7, Providence 8, St. John's 8, Marquette 15, Georgetown 40, DePaul 75. Where we ran into trouble was, you know, Villanova's been banged up. Pascal's been hurt. They've had guys hurt all year. You know, we're Phil trying Booth. To figure yep. out how good this team was. And to your point, you know, some of these teams don't necessarily care about winning their conference tournament, and some of it was motivation too. So at this point, basically, Villanova has a number one seed locked up, and we went ahead and said, okay, let's make an assumption here while we're making odds that Villanova, and it was at the time when we were doing it, it was the last four games, they hadn't played DePaul yet, who you knew they were going to wax, and they did. Let's make an assumption that those last four games versus DePaul, at Creighton, at Seton Hall, at Georgetown, they go 3-1 in. They certainly could lose both at Creighton and Seton Hall, but it's not very likely. So let's assume they go a minimum of 3-1, and they're actually probably a favorite to go 4-0. They're locked in as a number one seed in the NCAA tournament at that point. Is there this, you know, all-in-all motivation to go out and have your players, even though you're already missing guys, have a couple of guys banged up, is there that motivation to go out and put all this effort into winning your conference tournament? And if there's not, how much do we downgrade them because they're so good in that conference? And then below them, there's this huge group of six teams that can all win. And then how do you grade St. John's? Because of all the 3-12 teams that we're going to put odds on, St. John's is probably one of the best 3-12 teams. And they were on a hot run before they ran into that loss in their last game. They were on a three-game winning streak. Of course, two of those were over Duke and Villanova, so it was a little bit difficult to grade out St. John's and a little bit of difficulty grading Villanova at the top. And to your point, since Xavier never beats Villanova, you know, what can you make the odds on Xavier?
Yeah, it is an interesting conference in that sense. I mean, and then the location of where the tournament is, I mean, you know, Shamari Ponds could take over games, but
yeah, it's Madison Square Garden in New York.
Yeah, but it's almost like I would discard Xavier. Now I have a future on Xavier at 40-1 to win it all from way back when, but I wouldn't take them to win the Big East tournament because in order for them to get to the Final Four, they need to avoid Villanova at all costs. I mean, they've lost 10 of 11 at most by double digits. Butler would be an interesting team to me for the conference tournament and or St. John's, depending on the number, because those are two teams that I think can beat Villanova. And I think you make a really good point in that Villanova, if they pretty much have a one seed locked up, since they've been dealing with so many injuries with Phil Booth and Pascal, they probably want to be more concerned with getting healthy, you know, than winning the conference tournament, which probably doesn't mean as much when they have bigger fish to fry. So I think it's a good point there. Colin, did you want to ask anything about the chances of your Arkansas boys? Sorry, I'm trying not to laugh, but.
Well, I think the SEC is just completely wide open. I think when I checked the whole how many teams were going to get out of the tournament this morning, I think we were around eight teams getting into the tournament with Georgia being, you know, kind of on the bubble, possibly getting out. And still that leaves out Mississippi State, who's at 20-8. I am interested in the odds in the SEC, but Arkansas is so streaky. You know, if Macon and Barford just decide that they're going to be able to hit threes and we decide we're going to play a little bit of defense and Gafford, you know, our freshman gets hot, we can win four games in a row. But, you know, I think right now there's a big grudge about who's going to get those byes, you know, at the beginning right now. There's kind of a mesh of teams in the standings right now. So there's a couple games left to determine who gets those byes. I'd like to see how that plays out first. But with the odds coming out, you know, it just matters who's going to get hot during this tournament.
Yeah, and the SEC is one of the few conferences that doesn't have a favorite 2-1 or worse in the odds category. I mean, we're at Auburn 7-2, Tennessee 7-2, Florida 5-1, Bama 5-1, Missouri and Kentucky 6-1, Arkansas 7, A&M 7, who's not playing well since J.J. Caldwell got kicked off the team. Georgia at 15, who just had a really bad loss last night that probably put them on the wrong side of the bubble for sure. Then Mississippi State at 15 as well, LSU 25, Ole Miss at 40, and Vandy at 50, mostly because without Fisher Davis, I just don't think they have any shot.
Yeah, and this conference is, I consider a bad loss. I consider losing at home to be a bad loss. It seems like this conference is just amazing at defending home and, you know, just completely cannot win on the road. It's amazing when I see a road win. So, you know, of course, Arkansas can never cover Kentucky within double digits anyways, but seeing, you know, even Kentucky win on the road, that kind of raises an eyebrow. But, you know, this game, this SEC tournament's going to be played in St. Louis. That's a new venue for all of them. I'm not sure how the, you know, I'm interested in maybe taking unders in some of the games that start off because of the sight lines and nobody's ever played in this arena before. So that's kind of the things that I'm looking at with this conference.
That's interesting.
Yeah, I mean, let's think about the fact that Auburn and Tennessee are going to be the two favorites. And prior to the season starting, you had Florida ranked, Bama ranked, Kentucky ranked, Arkansas. So the teams that were supposed to be there aren't. And one of those, and they all have plenty of talent. I mean, taking 6-1 or on Kentucky or 7-1 on A&M, who still has the best front court in the SEC, there's certainly some value if you can get one of these teams to get hot in the SEC tournament.
Yeah, I would agree. I think that it's a deep conference for sure. And I think Auburn has been weakened. I mean, they had that injury, that season-ending injury, which was gross, to McLemore, which hurts them a little bit. But the interesting, one of the numbers that was interesting to me that you said was Kentucky. Do you ever have to consider, okay, this, you know, because usually your Dukes, your Carolinas, your Kentuckys, a lot of times they'll be a 2-1. But, you know, with Kentucky's recent struggles at a 6-1, do you ever have to consider, all right, this, all the people that are to come to Vegas, there's lots of Kentucky fans everywhere, and we're probably going to get more exposure at a 6-1 on a team that's pretty popular. Does that ever come into play, or is it pretty much just all based on the algorithms?
It does. No, it certainly comes into play. And I think if the liability got too big, they would probably aggressively move it down. But there's also times where the math works in your favor, where you say you want liability. If we're giving 6-1 on Kentucky, it probably means the mathematical odds of them winning are about 10-1. And if we could take a bunch of money at 6 or 5-1, and, you know, sometimes you take your shots with those, right?
Yep. Yeah. Sometimes you take your bets. That's a good point. Was there any of the smaller conferences? So I can say we'll be having on Action Network, we'll be having a couple pieces coming out once about conference value, finding value in conference futures. One of the ones I'll be eyeing is Tennessee State, which I believe you mentioned will come out at around 8-1. Is there any smaller conference or mid-major conference that, well, first you can touch on which conferences you will be covering. I know we talked about them before, but just for everyone listening. And then is there any really interesting one that you came across that you think is worth mentioning?
Sure. So in alphabetical order, or close to it, we're going to do the ACC, the American, the Big East, the Big Ten, Big 12, the Mountain West, the Pac-12, SEC, West Coast Conference, Big Sky, Big West, Colonial, Metro Atlantic, CUSA, Horizon, Ohio Valley, the MAC, Missouri Valley, Sun Belt, Atlantic 10, Western Athletic, Summit, and the Southern. And yeah, I mean, Tennessee State was an interesting one because that's one of those conferences that a lot of people consider to be a two-team race with Belmont and Murray. I know that there's probably going to be a little bit of love for Jacksonville State, who's not playing as well lately and plays Belmont tonight. So that'll be an interesting game with a fairly low spread. I think Belmont's 3 tonight.
So yeah, I think they beat them before,
able
too.
To get the win tonight, they'll probably get a little more love than Tennessee State out of the gate, especially as they did coming into the season. But yeah, there was a few that kind of struck my attention. So the Sun Belt, UL Lafayette's played great basketball this year, and this is a team that I've actually made money playing all year. But I think at the end of the day, Georgia Southern and Texas Arlington at 7-1 are both probably really live to win the Sun Belt. I think those teams are a lot closer maybe than, you know, all the records would indicate in the conference. So I might look past Lafayette in this case and Georgia State and maybe go to Georgia Southern or Arlington, I think, are certainly live there. The Big Sky was interesting because for so long, Montana was undefeated for so much of the season, and then all of a sudden, the Big Sky turned into a three-team race really tight with Montana, Weber, and Idaho. Of course, Montana just lost to Idaho, and a conference that looked like it was going to have a runaway, maybe even money or worse favorite coming into the tournament is suddenly like a really tight three-team race. And even if you go fourth and fifth deep in that conference, Eastern Washington, who also beat Montana, or Northern Colorado, who had finally picked up a couple of wins after going through a little swoon, there might be some value there. And basically, if you think anyone's going to beat Rhode Island in the A-10, then you could probably find some value there as well.
Yeah, Big Sky is very interesting. I actually love I love Idaho's team. I hope they actually get into the tournament. Before we sign off here with Matthew, I know that you are a big follower of UFC. Have any thoughts on this weekend's card? Colin and I don't follow it closely. Colin will probably have questions more about WWE than UFC, but do you have any thoughts on the UFC card this weekend?
So interestingly enough, for Colin, I am taking my son. We have good tickets for Elimination Chamber, which is here Sunday at the T-Mobile Arena in Vegas. So while I'm not a huge WWE guy, my son is, and I'm taking him Sunday. But as far as the UFC main event, the UFC card this weekend, UFC on Fox 28, I actually have a play on the main event in this fight. The over-under on this card on the main event is 3.5 with the under at minus 130. We opened 3.5 over minus 120. And I actually liked the over even at minus 120 on this, and it's been heavily bet toward the under. And I think there's some misperceptions here about this main event and how it's going to go. Josh Emmett, who earned this main event spot by knocking out number 4 ranked featherweight Ricardo Lamas, is suddenly this known as this knockout puncher. But if you go back and look at the 4 UFC fights he had before that, they all went the distance, including all 3 of his previous wins over inferior competition in the UFC, all went the distance. The truth of it is Josh Emmett isn't a big puncher, but when you fight with those tiny little gloves, if you hit somebody right on the button, they tend to go to sleep. That was the case for Josh Emmett in his last fight, but he's not known as a big puncher. History tells us he's not a big puncher. And on the other side of it here, the favorite in this fight, but he's a big, huge featherweight who could probably take a punch. And on the other side of it, the favorite, Jeremy Stephens, he's gone the distance with featherweight champion Max Holloway, former lightweight champion Frankie Edgar, Cub Swanson. He's gone the distance with guys that know how to finish fights at 145. So you know you're getting a durable guy in Jeremy Stephens. To me, this one has decision written all over it, and I'm getting plus money on the over 3.5. I took a little flyer.
Do you guys have any liability there or elsewhere that's already creeping up for UFC this weekend?
It's not bad this week. We have there's a women's fight with a woman named Angela Hill over Marina Moroz. We opened the fight close to a pick'em. Hill's up to minus 160. That's our biggest liability right now. Former bantamweight champion Henan Barão opened, I think, at 145. He's up to 160. That's a five-figure liability for us right now. The rest of the card, I mean, this isn't a very good UFC. I don't want to say not a good one, but this is certainly one of the lesser UFC cards we've seen in 2018, and the betting handle reflects it. I mean, most of our liabilities right now are like 3,000, 4,000. It's just, we just don't seem to have a huge amount of activity yet.
Fair enough. And last question I'll let Colin take. And Colin, do you want to ask there's been a lot of kind of merging and mismatching between UFC and WWE. Do you have a question for Matthew before we let him go?
Yeah, two stars the WWE's always wanted is Conor McGregor, which they could never afford, and Ronda Rousey. So what would you line if you were to line a WWE match? What would we line Ronda Rousey against Stephanie McMahon?
I think they can't afford to let Ronda win, and I think at this point, let's face it, Stephanie and Triple H and those guys would always take one for the team to put the new talent over to make sure the company made money. So I'd probably say like Ronda 400.
Yeah, definitely a parlay piece for me.
There you go.
And then what about Floyd McGregor UFC line?
So interestingly enough, this one actually might happen, and it's probably odds that will be available on the betting board very soon as this one starts to become a little bit more likely than it is now. I know they're both teasing it. I think we would probably open Connor in the 800 range, something like that. And look, when we opened Connor in the minus 800, minus 1,000 range, opened Floyd minus 800, minus 1,000. People went crazy on me. You don't know what you're doing. You don't know what you're talking about. Mm-hmm. Well, that minus 800 closed at minus 400 and got down to minus 350 at one point because everybody bet McGregor. We're not here to predict two wins fights. Obviously, we know that Floyd should have been minus 150 in that fight, but at that point, we weren't going to take a Floyd bet. So you have to try to put out lines that'll take two-way action. In this case, I think it'll be the exact opposite of the Mayweather-McGregor boxing match. I think it'd probably be McGregor around minus 800.
I can't imagine. The amount of money that came in on Connor, I could not believe that number kept dropping. That had to be what if somebody took a dive? You know, there's always that scary factor.
Look, we were all, I think every bookmaker in Nevada was so happy to have all the Connor money we were. And then as the fight started getting closer, we were like, oh my God, like if Connor actually won, it was going to be a scary day in Las Vegas.
Yeah, I feel like every Joe Schmo in the bar all over the country was betting on McGregor. And then anyone who was like, I know this, is laying more money. Would you anticipate the same thing happening? So say McGregor comes out minus 800. Would you expect a lot of people saying, this is crazy, I'm going to go on Floyd?
Or I do.
Do you think it would be, yeah?
Okay. Especially since he knocked him out in the boxing match, I think they're going to say, look, Mayweather's never lost. And I don't want to talk poorly about anyone, but let's face it. I mean, both MMA and boxing are sports that I don't want to say have niche audiences, but have audiences that are very different and really love their sport. But if you just take a general fan of combat sports, they don't really truly understand or appreciate the difference between MMA and boxing. To them, a fight's a fight. And they're going to say, hey, Floyd knocked him out the first time. Floyd's the best. I think it'll be, to your point, the exact opposite of the first one, and we'll have plenty of Floyd liability in this one.
Interesting.
I think if the UFC really wanted to make a whole ton of money, they should take CM Punk and put him up against Floyd. Now, that would be... what would the line be on that? Because, I mean, we don't know what CM Punk is as a fighter because he lost pretty bad to Mickey Gall. At the same time, Floyd is a boxer, but we don't know what his mat skills are, and which is what CM Punk would try to do. So that, to me, that would be a really big money match.
And they're close in age.
Yeah.
Because, I mean, Phil Brooks is what, 38 or 39 himself? I mean, he's getting close to that. He's not that far behind Floyd. It's certainly a shorter gap than it is between Floyd and Connor. That's really interesting. I don't know. I mean, CM Punk, Phil Brooks, whatever you want to call him, looked terrible against Mickey Gall. But to your point, I mean, look, Mickey Gall probably is a real fighter, and we don't know if CM Punk is. You know what? I'd have to think about that one. I almost feel like Floyd might be a favorite.
Oof.
I know. It's tricky, man. I mean, we have no idea what Floyd could do. What happens when someone even kicks him in the leg? How would he take that? Or a body kick? Or an elbow? Or attempted takedown? Or anything? We have no idea, but... gosh, did CM Punk look bad that one time he stepped in there.
Yeah, I'm waiting for him to just get his ass kicked one more time so he can make a return at next year's Royal Rumble in Phoenix.
There you go.
All right, well, we got your WWE in, Colin. I always let Colin get his WWE in. Thanks for joining us, Matthew. We'll catch back up with you if you're up for it in March as we get closer to the actual conference tournaments. And I'll be rooting for your Rebels to maybe get it done this year for the first time in a while.
Thanks, man. Appreciate it, guys. Always a pleasure anytime.
Absolutely. Have a good one, Matt. So, Colin, I know that before we sign off here, we got a couple things that we're going to hit on really quickly. We just talked a lot of college basketball. That's the main thing that's going on for me and you besides WWE. You're going to have a piece coming out on the Elimination Chamber, which we mentioned. I was recently editing it, and I was – like, I don't know what any of this stuff means. There's someone where you think is going to take a dive or a weird loss as a teaser, right?
That's how these things work, though.
Yeah, I know. Yeah, I know. But there was some girl that's going to take a dive, a sham, I think you called it.
Yep.
And yeah, then you have some value on some underdogs that you're looking for. And yeah, so the key trend in that piece is that the lines are going to move quick. Like, and the limits are low. So if you want to get some entertainment money down, you got to do it quickly. And because you know, $50-$100 bet, I think as you said, will move a line from plus 500 to plus 150. And then once the script comes out, if that was indeed the winner, you'll pretty much know you have a winner before it happened. I guess There's no drama in that sense, right? It'll go to minus 99999.
Yeah, it does. Once the script's out and everybody knows what's going on, they'll immediately move the lines where you won't be able to bet them. But I think... it's fun for me to write this stuff because I know it so well. Sadly, I know this stuff so well, and I've been betting on it for so long. My whole thing is to turn a profit. I'm not writing the article to give you a flat out winner and say you should absolutely take this wrestler and hold on to that number until the very end. I'm trying to propose a strategy that says maybe you can get three guys at 5-1 or better, or maybe get one guy at minus 200 and take a couple other guys that can pay off 10 or 20-1. Timing is important, and you know, kind of having an idea of who you can just completely discard. I'm going to focus on that with these betting previews because I read everything on the internet when it comes to these pay-per-views. Nobody writes a betting preview. Nobody talks about how to actually try to make some money off this thing. So that's what we're going to attempt to do with these articles.
Fair enough. I guess there's no drama then when you watch it. Like, you know your bet's a winner or a loser.
And when I watch it with my sons, my poor 11-year-old sits up here and I already know what's going to happen. He's just so jacked up for what he thinks is going to happen. And then
he's the swerve.
No, I don't know. Let him grow up.
Not like I'm saying, like, say like, maybe this could happen, if he's really excited about something's going to happen and you know it's not, to kind of take him down a little bit.
Well, he really wants, you know, these kids get wrapped up into this and they love their favorite wrestler. And if I know something's going to happen, I'll say, hey, you know, maybe Seth Rollins might win the title tonight. I think he's got a pretty good shot. And then my son will get all amped up about it. And then Rollins will win the title and he'd be, he'd be a pretty happy kid.
Interesting. All right. So before we sign off here, let's talk a little Winter Olympics. I'm not the biggest Winter Olympics guy. I don't know what your takes on it. I mean, I like the hockey. I actually like the curling. I'll watch it late at night and, you know, it can get boring at times, but I like the strategy of it. And I love the bobsledding and luge, all those down. I mean, the bobsledding, they tied for a gold medal, was like the coolest thing I've ever seen. Like a hundredth of a second, they tied Canada Amazing. And Germany. It's been a bad Olympics for Canada. I mean, they're for their core sports, they always win in curling. They always win the women's ice hockey Canada team. I don't think has lost since 98. So that women's ice hockey game between Canada and the U.S. was sick. What is your, I have a question for you, an intriguing question before we get out of here, but before I get to that, what's your overall take of the Winter Olympics? Do you watch it? Do you love it?
Yeah, I watch it. I watch as much as I possibly can. I am fascinated by curling. I'm wondering, with all my travels that I've done in the world, how is it I've been in the Upper Peninsula of Michigan and I've been drinking in northern Wisconsin and I've been drinking in northern Minnesota and I've never seen a curling bar. I still cannot figure out how there's no curling in a bar where you can go and get a couple pints and play with your friends. That seems like a great business idea. As far as the rest of it, I actually like the winter, a lot of the skiing stuff. I am a skier myself. I try to, as a guy that grew up in the South, I actually go about 4 or 5 times a year to ski in Colorado and Utah. So I love the biathlon. I love everything downhill, super G. So I really do like a lot of the winter sports. But for me, you know, from a betting angle, I really just live bet, you know, some of the key hockey games like I did last night. You have, it's the same thing as, I feel like I'm dusting off my NHL playoffs live betting, where, you know, one of your famous tags on Twitter has always been 2-1, which means, you know, when an NHL team gets up 2-0, you know that the other team's going to fire back with 3 straight goals, and it's just a perfect live betting opportunity. So last night's gold medal game between the women for Canada and the U.S. was a perfect example of that. You know, one team got up by 1 and then Canada scored 2 goals. So it was a great live betting opportunity.
Well, funny you mentioned that curling club. I used to live on the main line of outside of Philly, the suburbs of Philly in Western Philly, and in Paoli, which is 10 minutes from my house, there was the Philadelphia Curling Club. It was actually in the Western suburbs of Philly. You could sign up for I believe like the Nationals were held there once. You could, and it's very, this building, I had no idea. It was a very discreet building. I never even knew it was the curling club. But someone's like, I'm going to sign up for a team it's like a Wednesday night bowling league, but it's a Wednesday night curling league. You could bring beers and go there, but there was a waiting list, believe it or not.
Oh my God.
In Philadelphia. So we never got, I mean, this is, then I moved on to another job. This is years ago. So I don't know if they ever did it. But yeah, I've never been. Never seen it live, never actually was in the place, but I did attempt, I was a part of a team that did attempt to sign up to be part of like a recreational league. Well, and it's like cool, you just drink beers and it's kind of like, you know, shuffle.
If you're an entrepreneur out there, I don't know how you're not getting one of these kind of curling bars together. It just sounds like one of the most amazing ideas. And put some cheese curds in there, put some poutine, it'd be perfect.
Yeah. I mean, it would especially do well during, you know, every 4 years during the Olympics, but yeah, I think it can catch on. It's just like a sport anyone can really do. So yeah, and I'm more of a Summer Olympics person because they feature the and it sucks when it's not in your time zone because it's not live when you're seeing a lot. It's just not the same. But the feature of the Winter Olympics, like from a, you know, programming perspective on primetime television, is ice skating, which I don't really care about. But the feature in Summer Olympics is gymnastics, and which women's gymnastics I love. I mean, you can make fun of me for that as I make fun of you for WWE.
No, I follow women's gymnastics too. So
actually, I do know you do, yeah. But you can still make fun of me. But Yeah, I mean, I just love that part of it is like, you know, there's only a certain age range really that you can be the best in the world. And like you give up your whole life for it. Mm-hmm. Like, I mean, and then you like slip on the balance beam once and then you're like, oh, fuck, I just wasted my childhood. Like the amount of pressure and tension is amazing.
I dated a 1996 alternate. That's how I learned all my, you and I were tweeting back and forth about Simona Biles like 5 years ago. You and I were tweeting about it. And I got all my knowledge from her because she's a judge at regionals in Florida. So that I love women's gymnastics. That's fascinating to me.
I'm still salty about my Michaela Maroney to win the vault because I mean she was a huge favorite, but I was like she should have been minus a million. She fell, like just completely fell, fucked it up. I've never seen her do it. And then her second vault. And she did so well that she lost by like 1/100th of a point, even though she fell on the first one. I was so mad. But okay. So here's a question for you. Just Winter Olympics and remove curling. I think I could do curling though, by the way. I don't know if I practice enough.
Sliding. You'd have to get the shoes and the sliding. That's what you have to master. It's not the mopping.
Yeah. Or can I be the guy that
Everybody wants to throw the puck. Everybody can throw the puck.
I think they rotate though. They rotate, and then
you'd have to grow a mustache though, and do the hat.
Yeah, the one guy in the U.S. has an epic mustache.
Yeah, the Andy Reid guy.
Yes, he has classic mustache. And I don't know when the gold medal match is. Maybe tonight. But I definitely want to watch that. But all right, so let's remove curling from the equation because that's probably the one Olympic sport where you can do while drinking beer, right? I would assume. Mm-hmm. All right, so. Which Olympic sport would you have the best chance at winning a gold medal in? So I'm going to kill you if you don't win a gold medal in 4 years, Winter Olympics. You can't curl. So you die unless you win a gold. So what you will do, and I'll give you $1 million if you get the gold. So you'll over the next 4 years, all you'll do is train for this particular sport. Which one would you pick? Which one do you think you have the best shot at doing?
Boy, taking my age into consideration, I would like to say downhill or super G because I ski a little bit above 45 miles per hour when I come down some blacks and some blues. And some of those super G speeds, they go about 65 miles an hour. So if I had 4 years of straight training and probably, you know, got off the beer diet, I'm sure I could get my body aerodynamically shaped to get up to 60 miles an hour. So I'd like to say that. But at the same time, Lindsey Vonn is claiming she's too old and her body's tearing her up. I'm not sure if I could do it. Now, the biathlon, I do own, you know, my family does go out and shoot rifles at target ranges. So I'm adept to that and I love to ski. So I think I would go with the biathlon because it seems like those guys can do that as long as they possibly want. You don't have to be 19 years old to do that. You can be any age.
The downhill, you're on crack if you think you get the downhill. The biathlon, I can see more.
Right now, I'm only 20 miles an hour slower, and that's on non-groomed pads.
Yeah, but 4 years now, you'll be 4 years older. I'm good at math. And you have to remember, you're going to have to practice. Like, you can get hurt. You blow a knee out, I kill you. Like, there's so much risk in that. And then you're not going to be faster than these young kids who are doing it their whole lives. The biathlon, you might have a better shot. Now, where I was going to go with it is there was, by the way, whoever invented luge you get to win gold medals, but without ever not laying, you just laying down. That's like, that's a sport. Now that's hard though. And you need balls. But there's one I saw, I actually don't know what this sport is, but there's one where some guy lays on top of another guy on like a luge type thing. Have you seen that?
What are you watching again? What website? Are you sure this was the Olympics or what kind of sport was this?
That was just a layup. No, there's one where like one guy lays on the other in like a luge format. I should have looked this up before, but like I would say either that because one of those has to be not the main guy, or like the middle guy in a bobsled team, right? Like all I gotta do is perfect getting in there.
Right.
Like, isn't like the anchor, the guy in the front and the guy in the back? Like, what's the guy in the middle doing? He just has to get in and then he's just chilling.
He's got to be like as light as a jockey. That's his job, right? Because I mean, that bobsled, you got a driver, right? Or I think they call it a pilot. And then you got the guy that does the pushing. So I'm not sure what the middle guy does.
There's got to be something new outside I don't know about. But that's what I would say either that or Yeah, it's got to be that. I mean, like, I'd have to do something where I have a team and like I can rely on them more and then just focus on one thing. So, I mean, I could just get rail thin and then just practice hopping in a bobsled on ice for 4 years. Like, I would be the best hopper. All, that's all I would do. Like, I would just hop it up, like, just over, like cool running style. 5'9".
You know who'd be good at laying down at the luge? That'd be the Pittsburgh basketball team.
Or the Arkansas basketball team the other night.
Yeah, that was terrible.
I'm going to look up. I have to look that up, but I'll find out what that sport is. That porno-sounding sport that I saw. It was like a skeleton thing, but like two, it was literally two guys.
They're boning.
All right. So thanks. We'll sign off on this note. Thanks again to Michael. Matthew, for joining us from Cantor. And I'm excited for the release of all of those college basketball conference tournament futures. We'll dive into that. We'll have a lot of content as far as trying to identify value there. And look out for Colin's WWE piece. WWE piece coming out this weekend, betting preview for the
Elimination Chamber. And it's going to be all over your timeline. Chamber. You can admit you know what it is.
Elimination Chamber. And we'll start approaching football again soon enough. We'll have draft and college football stuff. And, you know, eventually we'll have win totals come out for college football. And then we'll start diving into there. But until then, Colin will be diving into WWE and keeping us all updated. So thanks for listening, everyone. We'll catch y'all next week. Cheers.
With so much drama in the LBC, it's kind of hard being Snoop D-O-double-G. But I somehow, some way, keep coming up with funky-ass shit like every single day. May I kick a little something for the G's and make a few ends as I breeze through. 2 a.m. and the party still jumping cause my mama ain't home. I got bitches in the living room getting it on and they ain't leaving till 6 a.m. So what you wanna do? Shit, I got a pocket full of rubbers and my homeboys do too.